Right now it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast it after our noon news during the week, also on the weekend as well. You can find David at his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And he's been looking under every nook and cranny in Washington, D.C. to find that. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you. I'm far away from Washington, though. I'm in the relatively comfortable, secluded state of Maine. And my sympathy goes out to all of you who are suffering power outages in the wake of the hurricane, or the hurricane that became a tropical storm. And frankly, by the time it got to us, had only gusts of wind that could just about stretch to 17 miles an hour. So no utility poles got downed by flying trees here, I have to say. But as I say, I sympathize with everyone who further south has been suffering. And suffering for so long after the event. Clearly the utility companies are not getting getting their hands around the restoration process very well.
And, you know, it's what happened. Of course, we had the double whammy of two tornadoes 2 days before the tropical storm hit. But here's what the problem is. About 10, 11 years ago, maybe longer than that, we had a terrible October snowstorm where we got 40 inches of snow. And basically, the state of Connecticut totally was without power for about 6 days. We here in the northwest corner were without power for about 11 days. And at that point, all the utility companies were call on the carpet, and things were designed up so that wouldn't happen again. And and like I say to people, it's, you know, don't take, you know, thank the people you see out there working. They're only sent where they're meant to be sent by their companies. Obviously, once again, Eversource in Connecticut did not have a great plan in effect because, David, we had tropical storm warnings here. Warnings 2 days in advance, and we got 70 mile an hour gusts of wind, steady winds at 25 to 40 miles an hour. This was all known 2 days in advance, and that's why the governor now and PURA, the state regulating committee, and people want answers as to why the management of these companies just can't seem to set up and put things into effect that would get a quicker initial response. I mean, you know, you have to have that initial response when you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trees in a town or in an area, thousands of trees come down, and you have to go out and assess. But once that assessment is done, people want to see trucks rolling in the street, to be quite honest with you, and it just hasn't been that way. So it's just been one of those. It's been a frustrating year, and this is just another thing on top of it, you know.
Well, it couldn't come at a worse time. People's trust in authorities and people who are meant to be public servants is already at a very low ebb, and things like this just make cynics out of us all, I'm afraid. I look worldwide at the moment, and that appalling explosion in Beirut, Lebanon, is another instance of of warnings being ignored, of a political system which has gotten so corrupted and so lackadaisical and incapable of doing its basic job of protecting its own citizens, allowed this massive cargo of dangerous, well, very unstable at least, ammonium nitrate. It's not dangerous in itself, but if it's not stored properly, it becomes extremely unstable. And it was sitting in Beirut Harbor for about 6 years, not dealt with, although it was known about. So this kind of inattention to the basics of protecting your own people, your own citizenry, is a phenomenon which I think, you know, derives a lot of the time from ineffective leadership. And you're right, don't blame the people who are trying to fix things on the ground. It's the people who are supposed to be taking the overview who are clearly at fault.
It's, you know, and I'm glad you go to what happened in Beirut, because once again, this is a major city, folks, in a country that just can't ever seem to get out of the terror. I mean, Beirut, when I was a kid, was a gorgeous, beautiful place. And over the years, we've seen it shot up and rebuilt. And then what you just point out, to have something sit there, a boatload of ammonium nitrate, and people here just knows what happens when that type of bomb goes off, what happened here in this country. And you see it happen in the center of a major city. And people here, and you wonder why people, you're right, have a quizzing look at governments, not only their own, but in general, all governments, when things like this are allowed to happen. And who's the one that suffers? The people that are governed.
And disproportionately, of course, in Beirut, yeah, as in all of the United States right now, with our natural disaster, natural though it may be, it's worsened enormously by the human factor. The governing human factor, the leadership in human society, and when we look at this, we see echoes, of course, of a system rotting from the head. I know Beirut from war reporting. I'm afraid although I did know it when it was a beautiful city, like you. In fact, it has the potential all the time to be an extraordinarily wonderful place to live. Right by the water there, a beautiful corniche running alongside the waterfront. Civil war, inefficient government, and factional fighting within governments has led to the situation where the basic principle of government is forgotten and laid aside. The principal business of government, of course, is to make life better, make life livable for its citizens. And that's simply not happened. And in appalling cases this week, the shocking inefficiency of electricity supply in our country along the eastern seaboard, and the far more fatal and shocking explosion in Beirut.
You know, you look at, and I'm glad you bring this up, you look at the basic reason we have a government in place, and this is no matter where you are, whether it's a tyrannical government, whether it's a strong leader, a weak leader, whether it's democracy or not, people expect on whatever type of government they have, for that government to help them out in a time of need. And I think what has really put most of America on edge is the lack of federal leadership in the COVID-19 crisis. And then all of a sudden, on top of that, you added a drought in. And then on top of that, you've added a tropical depression. And you've added all the other natural things.
And, of course, the financial crisis that has accompanied COVID-19 as well.
As that
enormous factor, which is rattling nerves throughout the country.
And also the problem with rogue police officers. These problems, the rogue police officer problems, would be a problem. But when you add all these other problems on top of very poor leadership out of Washington, D.C. I include the president, I include the House and the Senate in this as well. When you have poor leadership on a national level and the federal government does not get involved to help states out, David, I've been talking here for the past 3 weeks, and people are starting to understand. We all want schools to reopen. We all want children to go back to school, students to go back to college. We all want parents to be able to send their kids to school. Everybody wants it done safely. The money it's going to involve to do this is massive, and the federal government is not stepping forward. People have a very serious problem coming up when the schools open and have to do things to make it safe for teachers and students and families. Where is that money coming from? Because it's not coming out of the education budget that's currently passed for almost every school district. And this is why people look at the federal government and say, Yeah, you know, even people who don't like what they call handouts, which I never understood, because I don't consider Social Security or help for people that don't have money just a handout. But even people, they're just fed up with a lack of vision and leadership by major corporations and by our government.
Yeah, and nothing could make the case more clearly than how, in this case, the leadership is lacking, and the systematic effects of a rotting head infecting the whole body politic and the entire functioning of the country, right through a CDC that is clearly in thrall to the administration and cannot operate with scientific independence. And at the same time, against this background, as you say, of enormous slump in trust for anything in our institutions that can remotely be said to be providing the services and the principles of democracy that we cherish, and it throws, and I say this because I have a slot called the Media Beat, and I patrol that media beat every week. It's the job of the media to keep our leaders on their toes, and I want to bring in our fanfare now, because I've seen an example this week of work which throws this whole situation into a very sharp light, and it's a wonderful piece of work. Can we hear the fanfare for this piece?
Oh gosh, yeah. Hang on a second here. I have to get it set here. Hang on. Bear with me a second here. Bear with me a second.
Well, it's there, I know.
It's a
piece of work which I find really valuable and well worth fanfaring. It's from The Atlantic again, a magazine which I've been awarding kudos to throughout this crisis. They have been keeping their journalistic tabs on this situation excellently.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I think I've got it all set here. I had to, once again, because we're on generator power, I had to reset a whole bunch of things. But
everything is affected by our current crisis, even the broadcasting of little bits of music.
Here we go. There we go.
Well, let's hear it for The Atlantic magazine, an extraordinary publication which is doing a great job at the moment. And I have to say, I've given my one of these awards, these weekly awards that I'm calling Find the Good and Praise It awards, before. I've singled out The Atlantic's coverage of COVID-19 altogether, and in particular, their very fine science reporter, Ed Young. Ed Young is originally a ethnic Chinese from Malaya, but he immigrated to Britain in his teens and is now a British citizen, but lives in the States and works very, very effectively for The Atlantic, who give him a very broad scope in science as a whole. He's one of those science journalists that really makes your heart proud of the profession. And I know as a kid in Britain, he was a complete fanboy for David Attenborough, which makes my heart warm, because I think one of his best, happiest experiences as a young journalist, and he is a young journalist, Marshall, in our terms, he's in his mid-30s, but he's been doing powerful work throughout the COVID-19 crisis. As I say, it warms my heart to know that he honors the memory of the active life of David Attenborough. The purpose of science journalism is to be communicative of complicated ideas in ways that are simple enough for all of us non-scientists to understand, and he does it on a regular weekly basis. But this week, the physical magazine of the Atlantic, the magazine publication, has a front cover story written by Ed Young that is enormous and well worth reading every single word. It's basically a takedown of how this happened. And in fact, his opening line is, how did it come to this? But what he specifies about the responsibility echoes everything we've been saying about knowing that a situation is wrong and wondering where is the leadership in dealing with it. A virus 1,000 times smaller than a dust mote, he says, has humbled and humiliated the planet's most powerful nation. America has failed to protect its people, abandoning them to sickness and financial ruin. It has lost its status as a global leader. It is careened between inaction and ineptitude. The breadth and magnitude of its errors are difficult in the moment to truly fathom. In the first half of 2020, SARS-CoV-2, the new coronavirus behind the disease COVID-19, affected 10 million people around the world and killed about 500,000. But few countries have been as severely hit as the United States, which has, and this is a really important journalistic point for that he's making here, the United States has just 4% of the world's population, but it has a quarter of its confirmed COVID-19 cases and deaths. These numbers estimates, of course, the actual toll, though undoubtedly higher, is unknown because the richest country in the world still lacks sufficient testing to accurately count its sick citizens. So he takes it all apart and points out along the way, you know, as he should, as a journalist who's been consistent here, that way back 2 years ago, he wrote an article for The Atlantic arguing that the United States was not ready for a pandemic. And, of course, he wasn't alone. He wasn't just some prescient individual. He was basing this on journalism. He was doing what a good journalist does, keeping his ear close to the ground, talking to all the specialists in this field, whose business it is to identify potential pandemics and prepare for them. And he was very well aware that the nation's healthcare system was just not up to this job when it was inevitably going to happen, as it did happen, of course, and all the things that could go wrong have gone wrong, and he tabulates them very carefully over these many pages. It's a wonderful piece of work, and I urge you to read it. Of course, The Atlantic is, like many publications, is making their material available online totally free if it's COVID-related. So you don't have to encounter a paywall or subscribe in order to be able to read this wonderful piece.
Yeah, when you talk about COVID-19 and how it affects, monetarily this country, business-wise, health-wise, but what I think people lack to see is what it's done to the psyche of most Americans, which has really worn people down to almost despair and disbelief in everything. Yeah. In everything.
True, it affects our entire thinking as citizens, which of course it must, because if you can't trust your leaders to do what they're supposed to do, what kind of a life can you expect to lead? And aren't you going to get extremely angry and frustrated because what is to be done about it? Every citizen must feel powerless in a situation like this. And that's a very dangerous mix, especially when you fold into it things like the extraordinary return to, maybe it's just always been there, but the kind of dangerous, in fact, antisocial individualism that so much of America is now turning to. It's almost as if they've got a cussed self-destructive streak that says, you know, on the issue of masks, for instance, I'm not going to wear a mask. A cussedness in the citizenry is always a really dangerous sign.
You know, you look at what we face as a country, never mind the rest of the world, but what we face individually as a country, and what does, and you take Nancy Pelosi and you take what's his name from the Senate, the head of the Senate on the Republican side,
McConnell.
McConnell.
Very busy trying to regain his seat,
yeah,
or maintain his seat in Kentucky, so much so that he seems hardly present for these very important discussions about the next phase of stimulus for our damaged economy,
and just not steering the
ship in the way that he's supposed to be.
No, I'm old enough to look back and know that Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill had totally different views of the world. But they both managed to get things pushed through the Senate and also the Congress when push came to shove. That no longer happens here with our government, but also with all the crisis that we are facing, national crisis that needs federal intervention. What does the president come up with? He's come up with an executive order to ban TikTok. I mean,
yes.
It just doesn't. It, you know, you look at this, and people say, "Well, TikTok comes from China." You look at Russia's intervention in our elections. You look at all the things that can potentially affect this country, and our president right now comes up and says he's going to ban TikTok unless it's purchased by an American company. I mean, this is stuff.
Yeah, and notice, by the way, that the actual order by which he does it has no mention of the thing that he was demanding a few days ago, which was so crazy that I suppose even he came to realize or was persuaded by his staff was impossible of achievement, which is the idea that if TikTok gets purchased by an American company, which is, you know, weirdly his idea of a solution to this problem, that the U.S. Treasury would be paid a huge amount of money. For what? Would this be a brokering fee? But that idea is not in the executive order, I am glad to say.
It's just, you know, you look at this stuff and you say to yourself, if somebody wrote this in a movie script, people wouldn't believe it. They just wouldn't believe it. How out of whack we have gotten as a country, and you know, it's not only us. These problems are all over the world, but the lack of a stable federal leadership coming to aid in crisis. I mean, you can just look back at the hurricanes at Puerto Rico, and you can see a trail. Every administration has a faux pas in it. Okay. Every administration, whether it's Democrat or Republican, there's a major faux pas. But you can't have this many major faux pas in three and a half years. You have no federal leadership. I mean, Donald Trump...
It has been an extraordinarily shambolic period of almost 4 years of the Trump administration. You're right. And of course, journalism is supposed to be keeping our leadership on its toes. And it's almost impossible to keep up with the appalling missteps that keep being made. But we have to, and journalism's job is to keep people alert to it. And the biggest danger in this is a kind of blasé, or at least a stunned numbness takes over the audience, and journalists' efforts to point out what is wrong go sailing by because we're just so inured to a government which is no longer doing what a government needs to do.
You know, every week we talk, David, and you just, it's like my grandmother used to say, after my father died, and we went through some real tough times as a family for about 3 or 4 years, on New Year's Eve, my grandmother would look around and say, it can't get any worse. And finally, after the third year of saying that, my mother looked back at her and said, don't say that anymore. I mean, you just...
We've only got less than 100 days until our election and the possibility of change. But who knows? It could even get worse between now and then.
Well, David, I want you to enjoy your quiet moments of reflection up there in that beautiful natural environment called Maine.
Thank you. I intend to. But I'll be back with you next week.
All right. Take care, David.
Bye-bye.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat this morning here on Robin Hood Radio.